You're listening to Rattle and Pedal, divergent thoughts on marketing and growing professional services firms. Your hosts are Jason Malicki and Jeff McKay.
So, Jeff, I've been thinking. I don't feel like this podcast is very scalable. I feel like for 190 some episodes we've been doing this, it's very ad hoc and it's not scalable. But with AI, I think we can scale this thing. I don't know if you've seen OpenAI's new voice release, right? So I've been playing with this. I was on vacation, as you know. I've been playing with this. I've put my voice into a couple of different simulators. I think we can scale this thing up, and we can release probably 4 episodes a day using AI. We're just going to cram it out. We're just going to ram it out all day long. People can listen to me all day long. It's going to be fabulous. What do you think?
Oh, it's going to be like AM talk radio. Do tell.
That's actually...
Give me details. You're introducing this concept to me live.
That's all I had. I just had this random idea that we could basically just shove anything we want into an AI simulator and it can spit out our voices, and we can scale up this podcast, and now we can go from 190 episodes over 4 years. And so instead of releasing twice a month, we could release 5 times a day.
It's perfect. And you know what?
Yeah.
I think if you perfect that, the professional services industry will just gobble it up.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is the topic of our day. We've got a great guest with us today. We actually have Aisha Armstrong from Vectorous. She's going to talk to us about productization, and we're framing it under the lens of generative AI and how generative AI is sort of forcing productization conversations in professional services firms. Productization conversations, that's a good one, and making it more urgent. So Aisha, thank you for joining us. Maybe give us a quick intro to you and a quick intro to Vectorous, and then we'll dive into this big heady topic. And at the end, you can give us a roadmap for how we use AI to scale up Rattle and Pedal to 7,000 episodes a day. I think we can do as many as we want, right?
Oh, Jason, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. So just a little bit of background. I spent the first 15 years of my career in product development, product management, product leadership roles for a large information services company. Went and led new digital products for a media company. And in 2018, started Vectorous with a former colleague of mine. And our hypothesis was that more and more professional services firms were looking to productize. So standardize, tech enable the delivery of their services, but they didn't have the capabilities or perhaps the capacity to do it successfully. And it turns out we were right, that this was kind of a trend that more services firms were using to scale, to increase efficiencies, perhaps increase valuation of their firms. But they didn't have what we call a product mindset. And so they were looking for people who could teach them how to think about, you know, rather than delivering value one-to-one, how do you deliver value one-to-many using technology? So that's where we've focused our practice the last 6 years. And we've had the opportunity now to work with over 100 professional services companies around the globe from all different subsectors. So accounting firms, marketing firms, management consulting firms, IT services, law firms, architecture, engineering, all firms that are looking to productize but needing some assistance in doing it.
I'm curious, who was your first client industry, and how has that evolved over the 6 years?
Yeah, great question. So our first handful of clients were all in the training and development space. So one was providing sales training, one was providing leadership training, one was providing project management training. And this was pre-COVID. So most of the training that they were delivering was in person. And they were seeing an opportunity to digitize delivery of their training services, maybe create subscriptions, kind of all-you-can-eat subscriptions that companies could purchase for their employees and consume training online, perhaps in a hybrid environment. And again, pre-COVID. And so what we did with them is we helped them assess the opportunities, figure out what features would be necessary, the pricing, the packaging. Turns out that all of these early clients were really ahead of the curve, because what happened during the pandemic really helped them juice their business because of the demand for online delivery.
And today, it's not training.
No, today it's really all over the map. So it's architecture, engineering, law firms, accounting firms, management consulting firms, IT services, whether that's managed services, software development, a couple marketing agencies that we work with. And again, the common thread is that they are either trying to tech-enable the delivery of their services, use technology like generative AI to make the delivery of their services more productive, or they're trying to create completely new products. And these could be products like software products that are bundled with services. These could be data products that are bundled with services, or products that are sold on a standalone basis because they saw a need in the marketplace. Perhaps they had a client ask for something, they decided to develop it, and then tried to take it to market to serve a broader segment.
I think you just did it, but I want to ask you anyway, how do you define productization? Because I think when we use the phrase productization, people jump to the last thing you just said.
Right.
A product. And I don't think it's only that. And I don't think it's only tech enabled. People also jump to software. When you hear the phrase productization, they assume you mean let's turn this service into software. And that may not be the case. So how do you define productization? What does that even mean?
Yeah. So we talk about it in terms of a ladder. And at the bottom, you have where most professional services firms are, which is they're providing custom bespoke services, people's time in exchange for money. And at the top of the ladder, you have standalone products like a software as a service product or a data as a service product. But in between, there are rungs. And that first rung on the ladder is what we call productized services. And so those are still services that are delivered by people, but perhaps they're doing the work in a more standardized fashion, like they're following a playbook and they use the same methodology with every single client. Or perhaps they're using tools like AI technology to do part of their work, which means part of it's standardized, it's tech enabled, but the delivery, the final delivery, is still coming from a person. So that's what we call productized services. The delivery is still a person, but the way the work is done is more standardized and perhaps tech-enabled than it was in the past. Then the next rung on the ladder is products, and that could be could be technology, like a piece of software. It could also be a book. It could be a one-time market research report, for example. But it's something that's kind of standalone, doesn't require a person to deliver it, mm-hmm. and has a set price for those features. And then the last rung is products as a service, where you get the recurring revenue and you've got more of a subscription-based model. But what's being sold is not people's time. It's either software, usually data, something like that.
Do you have to climb the ladder, or can you jump up and grab the top rung and hang on for dear life?
You certainly can. And we see that sometimes with smaller firms, maybe who are younger, and they started in bespoke customized services, but then they saw a market opportunity and decided to pivot their business model to become a product company. So that is something you can see with younger firms who don't have, so much of a legacy business. we also sometimes see firms who will see a market opportunity and they'll create a separate business, either, you know, a spinoff or, you know, some type of separate business because the product is really serving a different market segment. It's got completely different economics than their core business model. And so they want to keep it separate. But the vast majority of firms that we are working with are in the productized services or starting to create products that are going to be bundled with their services. Yeah.
Yeah. My sense is the motivation for productization has evolved and is evolving very rapidly. You know, and you kind of alluded to this, that, you know, the first one is productivity, right? We're charging by the hour. We want to get more out of it. And then I had multiple clients and worked for several firms where they wanted an annuity, right? They wanted more predictable revenue. So they were pursuing, you know, that grail, if you will, which in my mind is the wrong focus for developing a product, right? Instead of solving a problem, you know, what gives predictable revenue. And now, and maybe we can shift to this, it really is about survival. Because if you are not reinventing, you know, what you deliver and how you deliver value, you're going to be supplanted.
I completely agree, Jeff. And I'm not the only one. So it's rare for me to speak in hyperbole, but I think that what we're seeing with AI is completely different than other technological innovations that we've seen. And based on the work that we've done with our clients, it supports this. So we've got clients who've been able to automate using generative AI 85% of the code that their programmers were previously writing, or able to create market research reports using generative AI plus humans that are not only created faster and cheaper, but the quality is actually higher than what they had when just humans were creating it. Accounting firms who are able to reduce the amount of time it takes to do an audit by 50%. And we are still in the infancy right now of this. And so what I do when I talk to leaders is I encourage them, if they're not already experimenting, like Jason is experimenting with the new voice generator, that the time is now to begin experimenting and to think not only about how you're going to use this to increase the productivity of your work, but how might you use this new technology to do exactly what you're talking about, Jeff, which is to solve new problems for your clients and find new avenues of growth. So I completely agree with you.
I think I'm going to do that on the next podcast, Aisha. I'm going to turn my camera off. And as Jeff talks, I'm just going to type stuff in and let the auto generator spit my voice out. And then after that, I'm just going to get a voice prompt and have it feed right into ChatGPT. And then it'll just answer all of Jeff's questions. And I'll just stand here. Yeah. And eventually I'll walk away. I'll actually just go play golf or something. It's going to be great.
Well, I mean, because you have 194 episodes, yeah. I think it is. You have a lot of data. Yeah. So you could upload all of that to your own podcast GPT you create. And it can really start to understand and predict, you know, what is Jason likely to say? You know, when Jeff says X, this is what Jason says. That's not too far afield.
It'll start just blurting out BSFPS and prudence and whatever else.
And Michigan rules.
It'll never spit that out. That's stupid. Okay. So on this notion of business drivers, so I think you already covered this, but essentially, I think what I'm hearing you say is what AI is doing is it's changing the driver for productization away from efficiency gains to survival. And that's the gist of what you and Jeff both just said, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, certainly when you say that, right, most people, their amygdala is going to fire up and they're going to get defensive, right? We were talking about fear before we started. And so I don't like to say that. Instead, I like to talk about the opportunity and what I'm seeing firms really do. That's exciting. Like, it's not just an opportunity to reduce your headcount by 50% or 85%. And nobody is doing that, by the way. But it is an opportunity to get your professionals doing higher value work, spending more time on different types of challenges that they haven't had the time, or I would argue the data or the tools to solve before. And now they do. They've got the time, they've got the data, they've got the tools to do so.
Are you able to share any examples, or is that all client confidential? Are there along those lines? Because I think that people sometimes struggle with this to understand. Well, Jeff and I have even talked sometimes. I think there are people that you're taking away some of the work they enjoy. And the statement is, well, you're going to free them up to do all this other stuff that machines can't do, but that stuff they're scared to do. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So one firm that we work with, they do economic forecasting models for large, usually consumer products companies, where they're looking at commodity price forecasts, consumer demand trends, and they build these models for their finance departments. And what they are able to do now with generative AI is create more accurate models for their clients, because they're able to analyze a larger data set much faster. So the quality of the work that they are able to do has increased. They've also been able to take the data that they have access to across a number of different companies and create a data set that companies that have their own data science teams can now subscribe to for their own models. And so it's allowed them to create a product for a different market segment, which are those very, very large consumer products companies that already have their own team of data scientists, and they're just looking for a different in kind data set. So it's both, you know, able to increase the quality, but also create a new product for a different market segment than they were previously serving. So
they've tech enabled, they've done both tiers of the ladder, right? Rungs on the ladder.
Correct.
They've tech enabled the service and they've spawned a new product at the same time.
Yeah. And allowed them to penetrate a new market segment. And we're seeing that a lot. You know, I like that one because it's talking about a market segment that's actually a larger, large enterprise. So previously they were serving mid-market. Now they're able to go up to large enterprise. The other example that's much more common is so we're working with a company that does explainer videos. Mm-hmm. And their CEO realized, you know, December 31st of 2022, if I don't figure out this generative AI thing, our company could be out of business. So he set up a Skunkworks team to spend 6 months using generative AI to determine how much of the video creation process could they automate. And what they found is they were able to automate more than half of the work that professionals had done and create a new product for a more price-sensitive segment of the market that didn't want a professional services team, a group of creatives kind of hand-holding, giving them the full range of options, helping them brainstorm and workshop ideas. They just wanted a cheap way to get an explainer video created. So they have spun that out under a separate brand name, and it's targeting a more price sensitive market segment.
Even more price sensitive than the core of explainer video consumers in the first place.
Right.
That's alarming.
You're listening to Rattle and Pedal, divergent thoughts on growing your professional services firm. Your hosts are Jason Malicki, principal of Rattleback, the marketing agency for professional services firms, and Jeff McKay, former CMO and founder of strategy consultancy Prudent Pedal. If you find this podcast helpful, please help us by telling a friend and rating us on iTunes. Thank you. Now back to Jason and Jeff.
Okay. let's talk about what good productization looks like. You know, when you do this well, what does it look like? I mean, we talked about the rungs of the ladder, and I love that because it gives you a structure to think about it. But how do you, how do you unpack it the right way, I guess? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, totally. So I want to go back to something that Jeff alluded to, and that is really good productization starts with a customer problem. So one of the things that just breaks my heart is when a firm comes to us and they've spent perhaps seven figures creating some type of software product. And usually it was because a client or two asked for it. And they thought this was going to be their ticket to completely transforming their business model and becoming a software company. But the product's not selling. And they want our help in figuring out why. Like, how do they fix it? And the first thing we do is we ask them, well, what customer problem is this solving? And who has that problem? And you would be shocked, or maybe not, depending on your own experience, how many just look at us like a deer in the headlights and they can't answer that question. And it's so heartbreaking because they've spent so much money already creating something that honestly nobody really wants. So one of the first things that we do when we're working with companies is get them, teach them how to really identify what we call urgent and expensive customer problems. And then identify what segments of the marketplace have those problems. And if that is an attractive market segment for them to go after, given their legacy services business.
So do you enjoy coming in and telling the emperor he has no clothes on?
No, of course not.
Oh, come on.
Kind of a perverse pleasure in coming in and saying, oh, you just squandered all of this money.
No, of course not. Because I mean, usually, and I'm sure this is true of the firms that you work with, you know, this investment came out of partner distributions. You know, you're talking about people's pocketbooks. You know, there's not usually a private, sometimes there's a private equity firm who's driving this. But usually, you know, they're funding this out of existing cash flow and have reduced partner distributions in order to pay for these product development.
What are the other things you see? What are the other mistakes that you're seeing frequently or when you walk in the door? I know you have a couple of different blogs and posts you've written about this. There's one called The Four Horsemen. There's one called The Seven Deadly Sins. What else do you see?
Yeah. So we do kind of orient our clients around the seven deadly sins or mistakes of productization. And developing a product that doesn't solve an urgent and expensive problem is one of those sins. The other one, you mentioned the Four Horsemen, is not paying attention to your culture. Productization requires firms to fundamentally rethink how they create value. So rather than creating value one-to-one, you're creating value one-to-many. Rather than, you know, Aisha Armstrong creating value for Jeff and Jason, it's intellectual property that has been documented, hopefully protected, creating value for Jeff and Jason. And that is a very different way of thinking, and it requires very different behaviors from the people in your organization to be successful. So what we see and what we call the Four Horsemen are these cultural attributes of professional services firms that have been important for their success in delivering customized services, but are now getting in their way when they're trying to deliver productized services or products. So for example, one of those horsemen is the need to know the answer, to be the expert, right? Right? Yeah. So I pay my attorney to know the law. I don't pay her to learn the law on the job, right? But when you're productizing and you're innovating, you're going in with a learner's mindset. You have to test and learn and be willing to fail, be open to experimentation, and be able to admit that perhaps you were wrong about market demand, you know, for a particular product, or who had this problem, or even what the right pricing might be for the product. So that kind of going from a posture of knowing to a posture of learning can be very difficult for a lot of organizations when they've really prized always being right and always knowing the answer. Another one that we see get in the way of a lot of firms is this focus on individual heroics. So it's, you know, it's my Rolodex that brought in the business, and it's my expertise and my CV. And now it's not about me anymore. It's about the product. It's about the team. And that can be very threatening for people who've spent their entire career distinguishing themselves based on their individual expertise. And it may not be conscious, maybe subconscious, but we see this a lot get in the way of firms and in the form of kind of sabotaging the success of productized services or products.
Aisha, when I work with my clients, I see all these fears. And when we were in the setup, we talked a little bit about what I call it, right? The BS of PS and how that impacts cultures. I think I hear you saying this, but when I get in with a client, one of the first things I do is share the marketing adage that people do not buy drill bits, they buy holes. Right. And, you know, people are like, well, yeah, of course. But that is like a mindset that just blows up, you know, within the organization, because they all want to be out there selling, you know, quarter inch titanium high speed drill bit. And really, instead of applying a capability, what they need to be doing is helping clients get to a desired result and removing that friction or hurdle that's in there. And that's such a big change for them. How do you help them overcome that?
Yeah, great, great question. So what you're alluding to is kind of the classic example in what's called jobs to be done theory. Mm-hmm. And that, just like you said, people want a solution to their problem. They want their problem solved. They quite honestly don't really care how you solve it. So the first thing that we do is really teach our clients the importance of getting good market feedback and voice of the customer, and how to do that in a way where you're sampling correctly across different types of customer segments, not just the ones who love you. And you're not biasing the person that you're talking to. And ideally, you're also doing some type of, you know, what's called ethnographic research in consumer products, but really kind of, you know, shadowing them and understanding kind of how they're getting the work done today and what's really at the root cause of the challenges that they're facing. So that's a whole methodology that we teach. And this is not something new that we came up with. This is kind of classic market research methodology. But you'd be surprised, or maybe not, how many professional services firms just don't have that muscle developed. Because again, they're so used to really understanding an individual client's needs, not the needs of a market segment. And so what we're trying to do is get them to think more broadly about what is the common thread across a market segment, because then that's when you have a product opportunity. If there's only one client who needs something or has a problem, you don't have a product opportunity. You have a services opportunity, but you don't have a product opportunity. So that's one of the very first things that we'll do. And then we'll teach them the importance of co-designing and co-creating a solution with their target market segment. And so this gets to another kind of classical cultural hurdle. One of the other, I think it's the third horseman of the four, that we run into when firms don't want to co-design and co-create with their prospective customers. It's this emphasis on perfectionism. So most professional services firms pride themselves in having very polished deliverables and having things be kind of near perfect when it gets to a client. But the very essence of product innovation, especially digital product innovation, is that you have to experiment and you have to get things out there quickly and see how customers actually use them and get their feedback. And so that means that the bar for what you're going to give them needs to be lowered, or else you'll take too long to develop something, or again, risk developing something that nobody will need. So working with firms to kind of address their perfectionistic tendencies so that they can iterate early and often with actual customers is another thing that we end up spending a lot of time on.
I can see that. I'm not surprised to hear that at all. I mean, it really, to a large degree, is a change management initiative for your firm, right? Mm-hmm. You got to bring people along.
Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, it's interesting because that's not typically what firms say they need when they come to us, right? So they want to know either why is an existing product that they've spent a lot of money not selling in the marketplace, or they have an idea and they want us to test it. And this whole issue of, okay, let's forecast out, this ends up being a great idea. You know, you're going to devote resources to selling it, to marketing it. How is this going to make your legacy services business professionals feel? Like, are they going to feel threatened? How are you going to kind of reset expectations with clients? All of that, it is change management, but that's typically not what leaders are thinking about when they think about, I need help with productization, or I want to go down this productization road. I will say that's one of the good things about generative AI that we are seeing is that most leaders are cognizant of the change management challenge ahead of them in getting their one professionals to use generative AI in the most effective way. And then two, managing client expectations around their use of generative AI, whether it's, you know, expectations about data privacy, but also things as basic as pricing. Because if you've been billing by the hour and all of a sudden it takes you 50% less time to do an audit, your hours that you're billing go down by 50%. So you have to rethink how you are going to charge your clients for that audit and think about perhaps doing value-based pricing or hybrid pricing. And that is a change management exercise with your customers.
Yeah, it also changes the business development and sales process. It's something that Jeff and I have done a number of podcasts about, that value pricing doesn't sit in isolation from value-based selling, basically. I think there's maybe one other thing that you hinted on that you didn't go into that I know from our pre-conversations. Cannibalization, you talked a little bit about it in that thread right there. How big of an issue is that firms are afraid that they're going to cannibalize their own services? How prevalent is that?
Pretty significant. Because usually products are priced at a lower price point than customized services. And they may also be, the cash flow looks different. So especially if it's, you know, coming in on kind of a monthly basis, you know, you're getting that cash over time, which can be great as an annuity, but mm-hmm. you've got to manage the fluctuation in cash flow. So what firms want is they want the products to be additive to their existing revenue and cash flow. They don't want it to take away from services. And so they end up being, I would say, overly cautious in introducing products to existing clients or the existing market segment that they're serving. And instead, try to introduce their products either to new customers, like new to firm customers, or perhaps a new market segment that they have never served previously, or, you know, maybe just, you know, it was a small portion of their business. And that can be done and that can be very attractive, but it does require more, as you've probably seen, more investment in sales and marketing if you're going to go after an entirely new market segment. So what we tried to work with leaders on is how do you mitigate the risk of cannibalization? And we talk about things like developing products that are complementary to services as opposed to replacements for services, or you know, thinking about different, you know, market segments and you know, really developing a product that's more appropriate for a completely different market segment. But at the end of the day, we also try to say, look, and especially now with generative AI, we don't have to do this as much because they're seeing it in their own group of competitors. But we're like, look, if you don't do this, somebody else is going to pretty quickly if they haven't already. So
the simple answer, right?
Yeah. So, you know,
that is the answer.
Clay Christensen, you've got to disrupt yourself. That's, you know, really, and again, I think generative AI is doing that work for us. We don't really have to make that case anymore.
As you say that, I love Clayton Christensen. So that answer was the answer. And you would think most business people would know that, but fear gets in the way of it, right? Denial, it's not going to happen to me. But if you don't cannibalize your own business, somebody else is going to do it. And you talked about, the audit, you know, cutting 50% of the time out, therefore the cost should come out. To me, that says the next step in the mindset that needs to change is your culture needs to be one of constant innovation, right? It's not one product and done. It's because this cannibalization cycle is going to be happening, whether it's internally or externally. You have to be looking for, well, what's the next problem? What's the next opportunity to add value? And I don't know that firms are set up to think that way, but they might be set up to think that way, then get to the productization way of thinking that way. And then it's, okay, what's the next problem? Let's go, 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 go.
Yeah.
They think that way for their clients all day, every day, but they don't do it for themselves very often.
Well, and part of the reason is it requires investment. So to do that well, you need a dedicated team, at least a person, depending on the size of the firm. And that's their full-time job. So this innovation is not a side of the desk activity. And that requires investment. If it's innovation using technology, that requires more investment. It requires perhaps skill sets you don't have internally. And it requires you to think about a portfolio of bets, just like a venture capitalist would, which means that requires even more investment. And you've got to be willing to have dry powder to fund those ideas that start to get traction, which is even more investment. So that's the reality of this. And that, you know, if a firm is not willing to make an investment, they're not going to do this well.
Yeah, we had Rita McGrath on, I guess last year, maybe 2 years ago. And there's a lot of great thinking that she shares on that front as well. I have one last question for you, because I know we're coming up on time. I want to know how you're applying your own thinking to your firm.
Oh, great question. So you talked about emperor has no clothes. Up until 2 years ago, that was the case. So everything we did was bespoke. And we were starting to get into productized services with like little Lego building blocks of our engagements. But yeah, cobbler's children had no shoes, emperor had no clothes. And when our first book, Productized, came out, so that was a product, a book is a product, but it gave us an opportunity to think about how do we create a system for professional services firms to implement the methodology that we talk about in the book. So now we have a productized service. Part of it's technology, part of it is delivered through people to install our what we call our productization pathway in firms so that they can develop this innovation muscle internally. And it's a multi-year process. And again, it's, you know, a combination of technology and services. But, you know, I like to say, you know, we're trying to drink our own champagne. But I have so much empathy for the leaders that we work with because I'm leading my own firm through this change at the same time that I'm teaching firms how to do it.
Well,
I'm just glad you're drinking champagne and not eating dog food.
I know. I hate
That's such a stupid analogy. Who are you talking about? So, okay. I know you were at time. So how can listeners find you if they want to reach you?
Oh, great. Yeah. So Vectorous.com is our website. I'm on LinkedIn, Aisha Armstrong, love to connect with people. And then, you know, our book Productize is available where all books are sold. So that's another way to learn a little bit more about the work that we do and get some great case studies of companies that have done this well and succeeded.
And Vectoris is VECTERIS.com. So Aisha, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this conversation. It was fabulous.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Rattle and Pedal, divergent thoughts on marketing and growing professional services firms. Find content related to this episode at rattleandpedal.com. Rattle and Pedal is also available on iTunes and Stitcher.